Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. I started out thinking I would do a different podcast recording this week, but given recent events, I had an epiphany. I woke up in the morning and realized a story from the past inspired me to do this one first versus the other one, and I'll do the other one next week probably because the other one's just as compelling and hopefully inspirational, but this one, I'm hoping that just talking about it will get people to understand why I've reacted the way I have to other people. This whole situation around COVID and the vaccine and the mandates and everything else, it brought some memories back. And I'm known to have situations in the early morning where I wake up and all of a sudden it's like brilliance just hits me for a split second and then it leaves me. And it got me thinking about how people are reacting to the pandemic, how people are reacting to the information that's out there, and how people are treating the mandates and everything else. And I read a statistic that said the majority of people who are in the office actually support vaccine mandates. If you think about it, the reason they support vaccine mandates has less to do with society in general and more about self-preservation. But if you think about it in self-preservation terms, it means people are misinformed. I want to state a couple of facts up front, and these are, you can verify them from the CDC site. I'm not making this up. This is coming straight from their website. What we currently refer to as a vaccine doesn't meet the definition of a vaccine. It's more of a therapeutic because, one, it does not prevent you from catching COVID. Two, it does not prevent you from spreading COVID. Three, it does not prevent you from dying from COVID. What it attempts to do is lessen the severity of any symptoms you may get from COVID. When we accept those three, and again, you can go to CDC's website and confirm that I am not making those three up. They say it themselves. But when we accept those three as true, if you hear what they're saying, it's not going to stop you from catching COVID. What does that mean? That means you could catch it from somebody who's vaccinated or somebody who's not. That does not meet the definition of a vaccine. Two, if it doesn't stop you from spreading COVID, it means that even if you are vaccinated, you are still putting those around you at risk. It simply means that by them getting the vaccine, their life might be preserved or their symptoms may be less severe. But again, that's all about self-preservation because three, it does not stop you from catching COVID. It attempts to lessen your symptoms. So now when we hear about these mandates of trying to force it and we're told that it's the only way to stop the spread, but the truth is, the spread is going to happen regardless of vaccination. That's fact. You can go to CDC site. If that's true and we accept it as true, then we have to question the morality of a mandate instead of allowing people to make their own decisions for their own reasons. Anybody that wants to get it, I support them getting it. I don't support mandates because it's based on data that has been manipulated to instill fear in people. Because we are drawing parallels between this that is not truly a vaccine by definition and others that truly are vaccines, such as the flu vaccine or the smallpox vaccine or MMR, mumps, measles, rubella, or TB, tuberculosis. These are true vaccines in definition because they are extremely effective at nullifying the underlying virus that drives it, but those have been developed over years and years and years and multiple studies and frankly, people dying. It took nearly a decade to get to the point of the robustness that we are seeing from those. Whereas what we currently are distributing and calling a vaccine has only really been out there for just over 2 years. So there's no way you can have confidence in the long-term impacts of it. That's a problem because if we're forcing something and something does happen, the immunity clauses create this barrier for us to be made whole again. And we don't know what that future looks like. And when we call out these factual statements, the instinct is to say that people are being paranoid. I want to share a story with you that you already know. If you're at least, I'd say 30 years old, you already know the story. If you're younger than 30, you probably don't know the story. And that's part and parcel of what brought us to this point, which is why I want to share the story now. You notice the title of this podcast. I want to explain to you who Ryan White is. You are free to do your own research and go out. I would suggest you avoid Wikipedia because Wikipedia is not really impartial, but choose other sources and do your own research. And then I need you to critically think without emotions what I'm ultimately saying. Ryan White was a kid in the 80s. Now, mind you, at that time, we were nowhere near, from a science perspective, as advanced with being able to detect, identify, or cure anything, nowhere near what we are now. There was no social media. There was no text messaging. There was none of the stuff that we have now. And so it was not only harder to communicate to other groups and other people, but when something would hit, we had a harder time understanding why it happened. So with Ryan, he contracts HIV, which is the precursor to the AIDS virus. HIV at that time was very unknown. Nobody realized what it was going to be, but he contracted it from a blood transfusion where the transfused blood was tainted and it basically affected him and he didn't have long to live as a result. Later, more notorious examples like Magic Johnson contracted AIDS, and then there was a pandemic around the gay community in Los Angeles that had HIV and AIDS implications. But with Ryan's situation, it was through no action he took, simply that they were trying to do a routine procedure to save his life and to make him healthy, that turned to be, at the time, a death sentence for him. So as his physical state starts declining, he wants to go like any normal kid. He wants to go back to school. He wants to interact with his friends. He wants to be treated like he had always been treated prior to this happening to him. And what they started seeing was that people treated him like a pariah. Nobody wanted to be near him. And I clearly remember at the time, there was all this story that, you know, if you touch somebody, you're going to get AIDS. If you touch something somebody touched, you're going to get AIDS. And if they breathe on something, you're going to catch AIDS. And all of this misinformation. And again, this is at a time when we had no social media, when all we had was word of mouth, newspapers, etc. And even still, there was misinformation about how this was spread, to the point that his own school and his community turned on him. He wanted to go back. They wouldn't allow it because the other parents, the teachers, they were spreading the misinformation. And at the time, it was misinformation because of a lack of information that he would infect all the students with HIV and thus cause a greater pandemic. They believed that just sharing a bathroom, sharing a handshake would spread HIV. They had situations where parents were pulling their kids out to protest what they believed was their kids being put at risk by this. Does any of this sound familiar? Because it should. Because as we deal with COVID, COVID is a respiratory illness. And so there is the risk of spread in close proximity. However, they have since come out, if you remember, they've since come out and said, okay, it's less about surfaces and more about air and aerosol. Where early on it was, nope, you got to do this, sanitize all these surfaces and Lysol and all these wipes go out of stock because people are wiping all the stuff like crazy. And your hands, you still should do the sanitizer on your hands just because you could touch something that was airborne. But the truth is, it's really about aerosol and airborne transmission and the droplets that come as you speak. That's what's conducive to the spread. And then some of that is vapor size. You can't see it. So it spreads through the air and gets into your respiratory system and thus infects you. But then there's this viral load aspect to it. So it's not just that you are in a room with one other person that happens to have it. There's a multitude of considerations as to catching COVID in the first place. Then there's the symptomatic versus asymptomatic. In the case of HIV, for the most part, HIV was, as a precursor, you weren't showing very many symptoms until it grows to full-blown AIDS. Magic Johnson is still alive to this day, even though he contracted HIV decades ago, because we at some point developed treatments and programs to help keep people alive. To our knowledge, the spread of HIV and AIDS has still remained as sexually transmitted, as in the things that we were telling people as far as handshakes, as far as bathroom sharing and being in the same classroom was all bunk. It was not true. It was mythical. But the point is that Ryan, when he finally did get a chance and got approval to go back, he had to actually sue the school. Now it starts to be nationwide. Now we start seeing that this kid who was treated as a pariah through no fault of his own, they have to sue the school to be able to allow the kid to go back to class. He goes back to class. He's bullied by other kids. Is this sounding familiar to you? They're throwing homophobic insults because when they're doing initial research around this, they created a correlation between, as I mentioned, this gay pandemic and him having caught HIV due to the fact that in the gay community, there is a spread of it at that time. Ryan was not involved in it, but they made that leap. They just accused him of something with no evidence at all and treated him as an outsider when previously he had been welcome. The family got abused physically. They attacked their vehicles. They attacked their home. People were being cruel to them through, again, something that had no, there was no fault of this. So the family then moves away from their local area. After they move away from the local area, the new area welcomes him and doesn't fall into the misinformation, does a handshake, and allows Ryan to be involved with the school and the class and not be worried about the way he was treated. He had some rough spots, but he was not mistreated the way that he had been in a community that he had been with all the time. This should sound familiar because that's where we're at now. We're at a situation where our community is turning on us for decisions that we are making, that we're just trying to live our lives, and because of a stigma that is derived from misinformation about how things should or have to be, people are turning on each other because of fear. It's truly fear. I'm not suggesting that there is not a COVID pandemic. There clearly is. I'm not suggesting the severity of the pandemic because it's still unknown. I don't trust the numbers, I'll be candid, because we have seen situations where they've been skewed to assume the worst case. But we are nowhere near a smallpox situation. We are nowhere near a measles situation. And just the other day I was reading in the Wall Street Journal that most of the people that look at the statistics are more likely to support mandates in those than people that simply go off their own empirical. In other words, if I'm surrounded by people that have died, I'm going to support one direction. If I have not been exposed to it, I'm going to support another direction. Okay, but we also have a fentanyl crisis. We have other things that are happening that are kind of being lost by the wayside because of the COVID fear. And now we're saying that people should lose their livelihood if they don't commit to a vaccine that may or may not be compatible for them because people are afraid for themselves. But if they're afraid for themselves, having the vaccine should already protect you, and somebody else being vaccinated doesn't additionally protect you. It may protect them, and if your concern is for your fellow man, we support this. But if you're doing it because you think it'll protect you, then the concern comes from the vice president going on The View and being afraid to be in the same room as other vaccinated people, which nullifies any argument that vaccination is really the right answer for being in the same room. If the answer has always been social distancing, which is what they did, we can do that regardless of vaccination status. Meanwhile, we can advocate for vaccines for those where we can't, physically cannot, do the social distancing. For example, in classrooms, we can social distance, but now because of classroom sizes, that's expensive and hard to do. So perhaps you do vaccination requirements for children because that's part of a mandate. But when you start doing it for an adult, say it's somebody that works out in the fields at a farm, what is the value of the vaccine to them? It's to keep them alive. What is it to anybody else? None, because they're nowhere close to anyone. Back to Ryan, he became an activist later in life, and he wanted to make sure that it was clear to everyone that all the way up to his death, that we need to have more attention around what HIV and AIDS are. We need to increase awareness. We need to calm people's nerves. And most importantly, we need to take the time to really understand what we're dealing with here and create a plan of attack for managing this because it's not going away. The result of Ryan's work is that we now have treatment options for HIV. HIV is no longer the death sentence it was believed to be at some point. We still don't have an active cure. There are rumors of one, but it may be misinformation. But we are able to manage it so that people can live long lives, primarily because Ryan never gave up in trying to increase awareness and calm people down and say, yes, this is a thing, but we need to understand it better. We shouldn't just overreact. We shouldn't just throw stones at people. We shouldn't just call people names. We shouldn't just try to force stuff on people. We just need to understand it. And then we need to work together, because we are one society, to overcome it. And at some point in the future, his actions will have led us to the resolution, whatever that may be. But in the short term, we had everyone from the lowest levels to the upper government that recognized that Ryan's efforts led us to coming together as a society to confront it. But we didn't mandate anything. We didn't mandate that, okay, every gay person has to wear condoms now going forward. We're requiring it. We're mandating it. We didn't mandate that anybody who gets a blood transfusion has to be this, this, or that, and the other from this neighborhood. We didn't set any mandates across from any of it. We simply took the time to realize it was a thing, realize the risk, understand what we're dealing with, and then take procedural actions to try to manage it and mitigate it for other people. And there were laws that helped to inform. And those who have the virus now get treatment to help manage it. But there's also funding that goes to really understanding to get towards a cure. At no point did they lock anything down. They did bar him, certainly, and barred others. But it caused me to realize that his story of fear-based actions, that was probably the worst time that I can recall of fear taking over a society. And somebody who is, you know, vilified for no reason, but still pushes and tries to just live his life as long as he could and try to communicate the message and increase awareness, because he wanted to make sure that nobody else had to go through what he went through. And partially because of his actions, few people have. That's inspiring. But that's where we should be as a society. We shouldn't just leap to, based on misinformation, that mandate and it's the only answer. We still should go back to personal choice and education and persuasion. If people are not good persuaders, they should not be in a position of persuasion. And we should find people who can persuade. Persuasion comes from trust. Trust is beget when you have a track record of being accurate and truthful and you back up what you say. The mandate is avoiding persuasion. It is saying, we've tossed up our hands, you're not listening to me, so I'm just going to force it, with no real backing, no real argument, no real math behind why it makes sense, other than a reaction to fear. And it's troubling that we haven't learned from Ryan's experience that takes a more measured approach, and instead we're doing the same thing we did back then, which is treat people like pariahs, whether they have COVID or not. We treat everybody as a pariah. Now, nobody is welcome. We don't want people near us, etc. And we're not willing to take the time to really learn what we're dealing with and create a plan of action and still manage it while managing personal liberties. And I hope that we get back to a point where we eventually come out on the other side. But my suspicion is COVID's not going away. I would like to see over-the-counter medications to manage symptoms. I would like to see social distancing as a choice of individuals, meaning that businesses have to adapt. I would like to see that we are allowing people to still live their lives in places where they make those choices. I don't want to see people overreact. I don't want to see people vilified. I don't want to see people treated like pariahs, because I don't think that's the society any of us wants, because we're not a communist country, at least not yet. And hopefully, what I've said and what I've described, if you go and do your own research, resonates to you as what I'm feeling and seeing, and we get to a point where we get back to personal liberties and freedoms when it does not affect you. If it affects you, you can make your own decisions and your own enforcements for your own family, but not from somebody else enforcing it upon you.